podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to Nessun Dorma podcast, your regular chat about 80s and 90s football. This is episode 16. I am Lee Calvert. And this week, like Jake and Elwood, we're putting the band back together as we welcome back the original lineup of Mr. Rob Smythe. Hello, Rob.
Hello.
And Mr. Gary Naylor.
Well, I'm the Blues, or the Blue Brother, I suppose.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. Very good, yeah.
Glad to be here.
The reason why we put this on is because we are here to discuss the greatest player of all time, Diego Maradona. Asterisk, Nessun Dorma podcast recognises that the greatest of all time is a subjective measure and other opinions and other theories are available.
But if anyone says Lionel Messi, I'll punch him in the face.
But on this podcast, we have a very strong view of who the greatest player of all time is. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, we are on Twitter at Nessun Dorma Pod. We have a website, nessundormapod.com, and the website address and email address, is contact@nessundormapod.com. Rob is not on social media because he's a very sensible gentleman. So, and Gary, you're at GaryNaylor999. Is that right on Twitter?
It's absolutely 100% right.
Why the 999?
I was needing something because Gary Naylor was taken. And so in an emergency, because I was about to go and teach a class, put 999 after the name.
Ah, very good. So, see, nothing's ever random with Gary. You learn this. So there you go. We're on, as you know, because you're listening, we're on Acast, we're on iTunes. Thanks for everybody that's listening. Thanks very much to Guardian Sport, who've given us a splash again this week. So any new listeners, welcome along and hopefully you'll enjoy this with us. You can get in touch on Twitter, let us know what you think. We can't really start the episode without mentioning the fact that this weekend just gone was John Motson's last ever commentary, a huge figure in all of our footballing lives, I suppose, is the best way to put it. We're not going to go into it too much, other than to tell you that episode 7, if you haven't listened to it already, is a Barry Davis-John Motson comparison episode, if you like, where there's great clips of commentaries on there and stuff like that. But he will be missed. I suppose the only question I've got very quickly is it all to do with the nostalgia of the time? Or, you know, because to me you start thinking, will another commentator ever be remembered as fondly? Will people who are 10 years old now listening to, I don't know, Guy Mowbray think the same way about him as we do about Motson? Do you think?
Well, to me, it's of its time because there was so little football that was on. And so the voices were really Barry Davies, John Motson, or if you're really unlucky, Alec Weeks saying, number 9, passes it to number 7, it's back to 10, it's a goal. It was the rarity value and therefore the thrill of watching live football or even watching recorded highlights on a Wednesday night. And it was a real thrill. Football's on. And Motty would be the voice that accompanied that thrilling action. So I don't think it'll ever be the same because, I mean, I don't know if I could pick Guy Mowbray's voice out now, never mind anything else. But I was at Southwark Playhouse a couple of years ago, a play about football. And Motty was in the bar, and as soon as I heard the voice, you know, tingle up the spine. Motty's in.
Okay.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that.
So yes, you will be missed, Motty. Episode 7, if you want some more detail. So we are going to talk about Diego Armando Maradona, the greatest player of all time, because there's so much to talk about. One, from a footballing point of view, and many other things around it. To go back to the beginning, obviously the big thing about him, he was from a shanty town in Argentina, spotted at a very, very young age when he was playing for what they called the Cebollitas team, which means little onions, if you don't know anything about Spanish. And he made his debut for Argentinos Juniors at the age of 15 and played for Argentina when he was 16. What's interesting about him is, I'll come back to his early career in a minute, but he's so massively associated with Boca Juniors, isn't he? But yes. Then when you look at his career, he only spent, what, 1.5 seasons there?
Didn't he go back there as well?
Did he go back there? He was there 81, 82, wasn't he?
Wasn't that when he missed like 5 penalties in a row or something?
And then he went back in 95, 97 when he was, you know.
But you're right, it's still knackered. Not much.
Yeah. Which is weird because he is such a Boca legend, isn't he?
Yeah, but I think growing up in Buenos Aires or even around Buenos Aires, you were either River or Boca, weren't you? And once he identifies as Boca, he's Boca forever.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And there's that great documentary that showed him going back to watch a game in the director's box, and he was like throwing obscenities at everybody and basically being that brilliant thing that he was when he wasn't playing football. But anyway, yeah, so Argentina Juniors at 15. Everyone, he was marked out as pretty special from early out, wasn't he?
I have absolutely no idea, but I assume so, given how good he was. Yeah, and obviously make his debut that young. I always find it interesting that he didn't play in the 78 World Cup. What would he have been in, like 18, 18, 19?
He played in the... Well, Menotti didn't take him in 78 because he said he was too young, and then he went to the World Youth Cup in 79.
That's right.
And was unleashed on poor sods his own age, basically. Which seemed incredibly unfair. He wiped the floor with him. Because in 79, they won that World Youth Cup Argentina. He scored in every single round and just basically gave this kind of masterclass while loads of sort of ordinary mortal teenagers just stood around gawping at him, basically, it seemed. But he didn't go in 78, but obviously that didn't cause Argentina any problems, did it?
No, not with the Junta in place, but that's another pod, probably. No, and they were a bloody good side. Obviously, they're Kempes and the very underrated Luque.
Front, weren't they? You know, they'd switch places. There probably wasn't room for a 17, 18-year-old genius. I mean, he was 26, wasn't he, in 86 when he won the World. So in 78, he would have been 18. And probably good enough to play, but, you know, they had Lampard and Gerrard in there, so...
In that, the funny thing about his Argentina, he was at Argentinos for 5 years, but always wanted to go to Boca. Have you heard about the story in 1980 when he scored four goals for Argentinos versus Boca in 1980? The Boca goalie, Hugo Gatti, had called him the little fatty in the entire run-up to the game and very disparaging of him. So Diego's response to that was to score four goals against him in that game.
You know, that takes me to what I think I love the most about Maradona. It's referred to a lot in his book, which is extraordinary. And it's an Argentinian word. I think you pronounce it bronca. And it basically means kind of anger, discontent, resentment. And he constantly uses it. Basically, that was his motivation, you know, whether it was against FIFA, whether it was against Italy when he was playing for Argentina. And it sounds like even that early in his career, it just drove him to kind of, in combination with his obviously genius levels of skill, it drove him to be the best player we've ever seen, I think.
And those four...
But it wasn't. Yeah, that anger. It's just fascinating how, because you don't always, anger is kind of a different association, isn't it? You don't necessarily associate it with skill, but he clearly was able to use it in a way that made him just produce these ridiculous moments of skill.
I've very much come to praise the pocket Caesar, not to bury him. So I tried to identify three attributes of Maradona that put him, ironically, head and shoulders over everybody else in the game. And I think that the three that I've got, they're all interlinked, obviously. And I'd be interested in your views. Is what strikes me is that he has immense courage, both physical and moral courage. When you look at Maradona and the way the game was played in those days, he's getting hacked, he's getting kicked. He had that terrible assault by Goycochea, which destroyed his ankle and had to be rebuilt. And yet he still keeps going. He still insists on taking the man on. And his positive approach to the game, his eschewing of the easy option in favour of the more difficult option, that's the kind of moral courage side, along with the physical courage of being able to take that level of physical aggression towards him, is absolutely extraordinary. I don't think I've ever seen a player more willing to take risks, both with his body and with the game. Part of the reason he could do that is I'd put him as perhaps the most gifted in terms of balance of any sportsman that I've ever seen or sports person that I've ever seen. John McEnroe is up in that category. Ronnie O'Sullivan, even these days, and this is one for you, Rob, maybe even Michael Van Gerwen. But there's think about balance, and see it in dance as well, which allows the body to move through space in a way that seems different to anybody else's. It's sometimes similar to grace, but when you see grace like Roger Federer, it's not quite the same thing. And Maradona's balance was preternatural. It was just incredible. Allowed him to always be using the left foot, but the body would swerve. He would have an aura about him which sometimes just sort of stopped players getting to him, and it's to do with that balance. And then the final thing about Maradona is that because I think he had those physical attributes, his leadership, albeit of a different kind of leadership to many, was again absolutely extraordinary. The way that the players looked to him in teams, not just obviously in Argentina, in the national team, but also at Naples. And that leadership went out to the fans as well, who could identify with him. We could never do what he did, but we could identify with the personality, the flaws, as well as the genius. And therefore, as a leader, he was, I think, both of the people, but away from the people, different, yet also the same in so many ways. And I don't think those three things have ever come together in quite the way they came together with Maradona: the courage, the balance, and the leadership. And when you look at his achievements, they are beyond anything that anybody else has ever done. And when you see him play, you know, I was lucky enough to see him on television playing, at the time, and it's very flat in which I'm sitting now. I saw him punch the ball into the net past Peter Shilton. What would we pay now to see Maradona live? You know, would I buy a season ticket and fly to Naples every other spot? I might. Don't think we'll see the likes again.
It's an interesting question, that what makes him so special, because there's been lots of players, hasn't there, through the years that had talent and skill. And why was he so much better? And there is something, he wasn't elegant like Pelé was he? And he wasn't noticeably kind of athletically... The way he moved across the ground wasn't like a natural athlete. Do you know what I mean? He didn't seem like a cultured mover. But then you come back to that point about the balance.
Well, one of the most extraordinary examples of it is the famous goal against Belgium, I think, in the semi-final in 86, where he beats the whole team as usual and then clips it into the corner. And he's rolling away from the goal, and he's half falling over, but he doesn't quite fall over. He's also half leaving the pitch, but he doesn't quite leave the pitch. And the space just seems to bend in a kind of, Einsteinian way. It bends to his will, and the pitch sort of contorts in order to accommodate Maradona. And he could do that. And you can see him, how he leaps out of tackles and how he can twist and turn, and as well as the vision to see the pass and see the move. I don't think any other players quite had that ability in quite that same way.
And you combine that with his brain as well, and his mental strength, and that whole bronca as well. I think it was just a pack. I think the angle was so important to the player who was. I completely agree with everything Gary said as well, particularly the courage. I think that's a great point. But yeah, I think it's that as well. You often, you think of players, Bronco, you think of players like, I don't know, Gerrard or, Keane or something like that. And then you think of skillful players as well. But to have both, as Maradona did, I think that's what elevated him. And more to the, ultimately, no other player has come close to winning the World Cup on his own like Maradona did. Only Garrincha, really, in 62. And Maradona also did it in Serie A when it was as strong as any domestic league has ever been. So to win the World Cup and Serie A almost as a one-man team, not quite, I think that's really what sets him apart. And also in an era when pitches were terrible and defenders, GBH was a yellow card at worst. So, yeah, I think that's... I mean, Messi is obviously a genius, but I just don't get the comparison because he has done it surrounded by other geniuses. He failed in the World Cup, really. And even Pelé... clearly didn't fail in the World Cup, but he's generally surrounded by better players. So, yeah, I just don't really see anyone close to him personally.
No, and there is something, that point you made, Gary, about how people could... You couldn't do what he could do, but he does have that Gascoigne thing that you think, that's what I'd be like if I was playing. I'd be running up to crowds and getting them going and taking it personally and wanting to be the person that everybody loved, sort of thing. That was kind of... And it is really weird because, as we're all English people sat here, and really, if you believe the narrative you're supposed to follow, we should all hate him. And yet I can't help but, even without his football, I adore everything that surrounds him. I absolutely love everything about him.
I wasn't overly keen when he sort of fired that air gun at the journalists.
I found that even quite amusing.
Yeah, I'll give him that one.
Well, I mean, I remember the hand of God thing, and I mean, I think the reaction was too much then. I'll say something that no doubt will get me some pelters. Thierry Henry's double handball I found worse. It was cynical. He did it twice. Maradona running through on Shilton, he could easily have got away with it completely. And it was, at least to some extent, instinctive. He needs to get that ball. And he jumped up and got the ball. And obviously it was a wrong thing to do. But in the pantheon of bad things that happen on the football field, I think the hand of God is very low in the list.
It wasn't even the worst thing in the match. Terry Fenwick, already on a yellow card, elbowed him in the throat off the ball. Fenwick could have been sent off four times in that game. It just comes down to culture, really. I mean, it's fine to elbow someone in the windpipe, but not to... And I get why people, don't get me wrong, I can completely understand why a lot of the England players can't let it go, but yeah, I don't know. It's just cultural differences, really.
It is enormous cultural differences, because I remember him sort of saying, and he's obviously had to talk about it a lot, hasn't he? And I remember in one interview, I think even he was speaking to Gary Lineker on that show, when Lineker went to interview him in Argentina, and he said, I just felt like I was back in the playground again. I just jumped up and punched it in, like I would have done if I was playing with my mates. And I got away with it. You know, he's like, well, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because we would do that with our mates. So we'd go, yeah, you know, you've missed that one sort of thing. And that's kind of a lot about him. I'd like to go back to that one, that 1980 game we were talking about. That point, yeah, he did basically ram. Not only did he ram it back down Gatti's throat, and here's a random fact for you: Gatti, the Boca goalkeeper, was wearing yellow specs to play in that match for reasons I don't really understand. Have a look on YouTube, and he scored four goals. Each of them, one was a penalty after he reboned the ball into somebody's arm and got a penalty. He scored a brilliant free kick, and there was one, and then another one where each one of them was brilliant in its own brilliant Diego way, you know.
Yeah, there's another word he used in his book, which is to vaccinate opponents he doesn't like. And literally it means to penetrate, but obviously it means to fuck someone. And he always did that. He did it. He did it to Brazil at Italia 90. He did it to Milan, who were the best team, along with Napoli and Serie A around that time. He did it to them so often. And he just was able to elevate himself so frequently to really vaccinate, whether it's teams he didn't like or like England for cultural reasons or teams who were just big rivals. It's just incredible capacity to do that. So yeah.
Can you think of any of the players who can do that? It's a good point though. How many of the players raise the game so regularly to the occasion?
I don't, not as often, but yeah. I can't think of anyone, no.
It's difficult, isn't it? The 1982 World Cup was a bit of a blot on his copybook, wasn't it? But I suppose it was for the entire team, wasn't it?
Yeah, we should just quickly put away the myth of that famous picture against Belgium, you know, when he's surrounded by players. It's a glorious picture, but all it was was a free kick hit the wall and broke to him. That's why it feels like it's in open play, you know, and the entire team has been designated to try and stop Maradona, but it wasn't quite that. And
it says a lot about him, doesn't it, that it's believable.
Yeah, that's
loads
true.
Of people accept that it's believable.
Yeah.
That's
still a great,
because as if you could put eight people marking one person in a game. But it's the fact that people believe that happened says a lot about just how good he was, really.
Yeah, although a lot of people say it was in 86 in the semi, which always annoys the anal bit of me, and I just have to tell them, and then I hate myself.
Have you seen that Belgium kit? That's never an 86 kit. What's wrong with you?
Exactly. But yeah, and obviously he scored a good goal against, was it Hungary? I think he whipped one in the post, but then obviously they were going out to Brazil and he kicked someone in the balls and but even that's great. I mean, his career was just such a mishmash of highs and lows, like really extremes. And I love that in a kind of age now of quite sanitized, boring characters. Mm. Like even like, what's the worst thing that's happened to Messi? All right, he missed a good chance in the World Cup final. Maradona, even Ronaldo, you know, like he's had more highs and lows, but compared to Maradona, they're nothing. He just went through such extremes, and sport misses that kind of personality, even if they're a villain, you know. Like my current favorite player is Scott Brown of Celtic, just because he goes around winding everyone up all the time, and I miss that.
Can I say something about Maradona's free kicks? Because I think he had a if not quite unique, then he had a certain style with a free kick. And I feel as though I'm the only person who's noticed this. And I, first of all, I can't believe that. And secondly, I just may be wrong.
Wait for the Twitter storm that's coming your way now, Gary.
You've got all these 6-footers in the wall, haven't you? And Maradona's, what, 5'5", 5'6".
Mm.
I think with a lot of his free kicks, he either takes no run-up or almost no run-up. And he's actually hiding behind the wall. So a goalkeeper is getting himself set to deal with taking the free kick. And the first time he knows he can get up onto the balls of his feet is when the ball is coming over the top of the wall. I think he used that hiding behind a wall and then hitting the free kick with a lot of whip and dip over the wall to surprise goalkeepers and avoid them getting set. The way you'd see them for penalties where onto the balls of the feet, take half a step forward and they're already sort of on the way out. Oh. And, you know, I think that if he did do that, and I've seen him on lots of clips doing that, I think it's an example of his kind of football intelligence that's much underrated.
I've got a memory of someone, it might be him, but someone who deliberately crouched for that reason. I don't think it's him, but yeah, it's a brilliant tactic. It's true.
He definitely did do a short run-up most of the time. He was a 1-2-step run-up type guy.
Just talking of his intelligence, there's a lovely bit, his famous goal against England, the second one. He, at Wembley in 79, he'd almost scored an identical goal, went through about 3 or 4 players, not quite from as far out, and he poked it across, I think it was Shilton actually, and just wide the far post. So then when in 86 he goes through, even in that split second, and there's so much going on in your head, he was able to process what had happened last time. And that's why this time he goes round Shilton rather than poking it to the far corner. I find that the capacity of a footballer is not just Maradona. The ability to recall and process things in a split second, just astonishing. Just as a modern example, that Firmino back heel for Salah at Southampton the other week, he processed about 7 things in about a quarter of a second instinctively. I find it extraordinary. And Maradona did that quite a lot and had that kind of brilliant instinctive intelligence.
Well, that 86 World Cup goal, he often talks about as well, that he planned to, I don't know if it's true, but he says he planned to give the ball to Valdano, didn't he?
Oh, I don't know.
But the angle that...
Oh, that's right.
The
yes,
angle he was
right.
being... Yeah, I think it was Fenwick, with Peter Reedus, who ran such an angle, he couldn't... Butcher couldn't...
Oh, no, you're right. No, you're right. Yeah.
He said he couldn't get the ball to him. So in a way... And Valdano says it just shows you what a genius he was, that while he was doing all this dribbling and getting around people, he was actually thinking, oh, I know where Valdano is, I'll try and give the ball to him. Oh, I can't. Oh, I'll do that, I'll do that. Bang, goal. Oh, I've scored.
And also, this happened 7 years ago, I won't do that.
It's just incredible.
There's a nice bit in that goal, actually. Barry Davis, who we all love him, but he can't keep up with Maradona. He's so fast. He kind of says, Valdano to his left, and he wants to say he doesn't need him, and he says, he didn't need any of them. And even he can't keep up. Even Maradona's brain, it's just...
Ooh, I bet Barry was haunted by that, by saying
he gives that brilliant, you have to say that's magnificent, that kind of plea for Joe Bloggs' better nature. And you know, in the
what's so perfect
England,
about that with Barry
not
is
one
the,
person.
What's so perfect about that with Barry is the beat. There's a beat that he goes, and you have to say that's magnificent. Like, I've just processed it and actually...
And I'm sure up and down the land everyone was saying
oh,
yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well done, Diego. Jolly good.
And on the radio, Brian Butler has that lovely rising inflection. And that's why this little man is the greatest player in the world.
Well, Morales, the Argentinian commentator, translated into English after that goal, said this. Genius, genius, genius. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta goal. Diego Maradona, it's enough to make you cry. Forgive me. Maradona, an unforgettable run in the play of all time. Cosmic kite. What planet are you from? To leave in your wake so many Englishmen. That's what the Argentinian commentator said.
I don't know what you two think, but I actually think the Belgium goal's better.
Yeah, I do.
Because England, at least he gets to line them up one after the other. And
which for him is an easy job, isn't it? That's the other thing. You've got to remember the level of talent.
Oh, I know. It's still a... Yeah. And also the other thing is that Belgium, there's the balancing that Gary mentioned, which is extraordinary. It's worth watching because he's staggering all over the place. The only one I've seen that reminds me of it is when George Best is run over by Chopper Harris. And his body goes like in a V shape, but he still stays on his feet. But anyway, Maradona not only did it under that pressure, and he has to weave in and out, but also the kind of fact that he'd already done it. You know, he's got a once in a lifetime goal, and then he did it again 3 days later. Like, it's extraordinary to do it on the back of what he'd already done. I slightly prefer that goal. Not that, you know, they're both.
To
do that in a quarter final and a semi final of a World Cup.
It's that comeback to the point you made, Gary and Rob, about that imperious courage and belief at that stage. Yeah. You know, he never doubted himself for a second, I don't think, when he crossed it, no matter what. And he had, you know, he had chaos going on in his personal life a lot of the time. But once he got on the pitch, he was just, you know, I'm at home now. There's a lot said about that warm-up, isn't there? Did he, you know, the video that's warmed, the video warm-up at Napoli in 89, which is great when you see it. And like then his marriage is falling through the floor. He's you know, all kinds of recreational drug problems. But yet, this simple joy of this incredible, almost like a circus performer. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean in that the hours it takes to get that good, you know.
I think that's a really great point. Yeah,
shoelaces are undone. He's so relaxed there. And he's just doing things with the ball. And, of course, you know, there's lots of freestylers can do this kind of thing. But in the back of your mind, while you're watching this extraordinary stuff, you're thinking, he's done that in a World Cup. He can do it in a World Cup. You know, it's not a kid on the street or, a, you know, a YouTube video where you've done it 1,000 times and you only get the 1,000 incidents of it. It's just that... that nature of ball, man, and space, which I don't think anybody's even come close to. You know, my dad, I'm often mentioning him on this. He said Eusebio was fantastic. He said George Best was fantastic. He saw Pelé at Goodison in 66 getting kicked out of the game. But, you know, I didn't see any of those, but I did see Diego Maradona play, albeit on television, and what a privilege that is.
He went to Barcelona after 82, and it's remembered as a bit of a, well, by Barca fans generally, as a failure, his time there. And yet he scored 22 goals in 36 games. His whole career, actually, his club career, he's 491 games and 259 goals. Just for an attacking midfielder, he's pretty damn good, isn't he?
Cheers. Again, in that era, you know, it's particularly that era of Serie A. Yeah, I don't know that much about Barcelona apart from that hilarious brawl at the end of his last game, and obviously the Goycochea tackle that broke his leg.
And he scored that amazing goal. He's one of the few players that got applauded by Real Madrid fans, didn't he? When he went round that defender, he ran into the post and started laughing because he'd been mugged off so badly.
It's slightly weird judging Barcelona, individual performances of Barcelona around then, because they weren't that good. We kind of forget that. They haven't won the league for, what, 8-9 years or something. I don't know, but it is interesting that you would think of that as the biggest club he played for, but it's actually a kind of almost a curiosity in the context of his career.
Well, he was injured, wasn't he, after the Goycochea thing? He had that massive rammy at Bilbao, which was just amazing. And that's
just a wild West,
isn't it? Utter refusal to take any shit off anybody.
I think that's what I love the most about him.
It's fantastic, you know.
And again, also in the modern world where we're all kind of sacrificing our principles for an easy life, it's quite refreshing to look back at his career. And he did some things that were indefensible, we know that. Although I'm not having the air gun at the journalists, I think that's just right. But just the fact that the total belief in his principles, or to put it another way, didn't give a solitary shit what anyone thought. It's quite refreshing, really.
And he's there's the other thing as well. Imagine what it, you know, he was a lad from a dirt poor background at the end of the day. He was tiny. Imagine how tiny he was at 14. And a bit chubby in 14 years. Imagine playing in those local Argentinian Buenos Aires leagues when he was 14, probably against fully grown men who he was taking the piss out of. They'd have wanted to absolutely kill him, wouldn't they? So it was probably very easy for him when he got to professional football.
That's a fair point. It does tie in, though, with that courage, like as Gary said. I think that's a really good point. That we forget the courage of skillful players and just how hard they have to be. And again, particularly in that era when they could be butchered, imagine every time you get the ball, you don't know. It's not that you don't know what's behind you; you don't know what's coming, where it's going to hit you. You know, back of the calf or whatever. Yeah. It's just incredible courage.
And on the flip side, imagine defending against him and not knowing what's coming. If you look at the 1990 World Cup, there's that game against Brazil.
There's that
marvellous bit where he picks the ball up and turns runs at the Brazilian defence. And they look, and they must have felt, and they looked a bit like they heard the door slam shut on room 101. And all of their nightmares had come to roost at once, you know.
He kind of breaks the first wave, doesn't he? He just, and you can see the second lot. First, they're almost looking at him thinking, look at this old man trying to roll back the years. And then he breaks the first wave, and they all think, oh, shit. And you just know. And then I think two of them end up running into each other. And then he passes to Kanejo, who scores. I mean, it's extraordinary because he was gone then, pretty much. He was half fit. He wasn't the player he was. And he still summons that in a game when they've been slaughtered.
Yeah, they were battered in that game,
to vaccinate Brazil and put them out of the World Cup.
The Brazilian players in their minds, they had that music from Jaws playing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great clip, and it turned out it was a parody, which I didn't realise at the time, but it's a Brazilian commentator. And when he breaks first wave, he just goes, "Atención!" I didn't realise at the time it was a parody, but yeah, it kind of sums it up. And another good point about him, though, that he wasn't just a lot of great players are kind of good time Charlies up to a point. They're great when they're in form and they're fit and their body's good and, you know, everything's going well. Maradona, 86 was that time, but in 90, he still had moments, particularly against Brazil, that got him to the final when he was nowhere near his best, really. And again, it comes back to that mental strength, I think.
And even in 94, when he was completely flying off his tits or whatever it was he was taking, there was still that amazing goal against Greece, wasn't there? That 1-2 move. And you see then that left foot still edge of the box, bang, straight in the top corner, you know. People remember screaming at the camera, but the goal was a blinder, you know.
It was a real kind of ticky-tacker on steroids. I mean, he played really well in that tournament. Obviously, we know why, but
Yeah, so he's... And we need to probably talk about his time at Napoli, really. I mean, Napoli were absolutely... When he went to Napoli in
85? I forget.
84, sorry, he went to Napoli, yeah. Nobody else wanted him. Napoli, as a city, was completely skinned. They couldn't even, collect bins or anything. And the mayor basically called him an absolute shedload of favours from banking connections that he knew to get enough money to pay a world record transfer for him. 80,000 people turned up to, I think, watch his unveiling or his training session. And in a way, when you look back at Napoli, they'd never won a championship. They were from, obviously, Italy has an inverted north-south divide, doesn't it, compared to Britain, England. They'd never won a championship before. It was, when you look back on it, maybe you remember, Gary, if it was known at the time, it was just the perfect club for him to go to. An underdog, a kind of working man's town, who had something to prove at the time. It was like the perfect match, really. Was that known at the time, Gary, or was it?
I don't know whether it was known at the time, but obviously in retrospect you look back and think, yes, that was the perfect fit. I think they had Robbo no better than me. Did they have Careca as well playing?
Subsequently they did, yeah. Not in 84, but yeah, they did. Certainly for the second title they won.
But I remember going to Naples in 89, I think it was. It was either 89 or 90, probably 89. And I, you know, obviously I grew up in Liverpool. So I go to Naples. It's a port city. It's got Catholic churches on every street corner. You go into any bar and there are photos of Maradona everywhere. And if there are not photos of Maradona on that wall, it's photos of Sophia Loren. And I go in there and I'm thinking, I'm at home again. I've come to an Italian version of Liverpool. Now, I don't have particular nostalgia for my hometown, but to see those two iconic figures of Sophia Loren and Maradona in every bar, you know, popular culture, sport, film stars, and people who live their own lives. And of course, both of them had their difficulties with the law, to say the least. But it was a mark of only a matter of a few years after his arrival in Naples, of just what an impression he made and what an impact he had, not just on the football club, but on the city itself. And I walked a little taller, I have to say.
And he made, of course, the whole city walk a little taller because they won that first championship in 87, was it, Rob?
Yes, it was 87 and then 1990.
And they won it with a game to spare. And it's just something brilliant. You can't imagine it's happening anywhere in Britain, obviously. But they had, funerals on the streets in Napoli, didn't they? With coffins with the rest of the teams in Serie A, they had coffins with their names written on them and actual priests performing funerals for all the different clubs that Napoli had beaten.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and it was just this, and for him, and it's, you can't describe, I think, how perfect it was for Maradona to give a massive up yours to what was really the footballing elite.
basically spent his entire career flicking two fingers at the world, didn't he?
Yeah.
I just had a look at Napoli's team from 86-87, and it's worth stressing just how few kind of stars there were in that team. They had a few international players: Giordano, Andrea Carnevali, Salvatore Bagni, Fernando Di Napoli, a young Ciro Ferrara. But that's kind of it, really. There's nothing else to, and all of those were kind of good international players. None of them were long-term stars in Italy, really, apart from Ferrara later in his career. So it just shows the influence he had. By 89-90, they were a bit better. Alemão and Careca from Brazil. But again, they've got no right to be winning. Not Serie A at that point, when you had the great Milan team, a brilliant Inter team, a really good Sampdoria team. Just to do that in the World Cup and Serie A, I can't get my head around it, Lee. I won't lie to you.
And he scored 10 goals, I think, in 87. And that's not much, but it was only like 1.3 goals a game. Or was that 89?
Exactly.
It was kind of which season it was.
Well, even... Yeah, we said that with the Rush thing, didn't we? I think he got 7 or 8 goals, which actually, when you're not taking penalties in Russia's season at Juventus, it's not actually that bad. But yeah, and also just the timing of the goals, the manner of the move. Like he scored some great goals against Milan. He scored a 25-yard header against Milan. he broke their big offside trap, you know, the famous offside trap. Yeah. Keeper comes out and he heads over him and he just slowly bounces into the net. And again, it's not just the way he scored and the timing. Even to do that, to break their offside trap, to hoist them by their own bloody... most famous thing. I just love that about him. Even, you know, the Italian 90 semi-final when they put Italy out and he takes what turns out to be Argentina's last penalty and he missed against Yugoslavia with a really weak penalty. Mm. And he took exactly the same, really softly to the keeper's right and the keeper went the wrong way. And it wasn't enough to score to be the full fuck you. It had to be exactly to goad them by taking the same feeble penalty. And then he went off cavorting, celebrating like he'd scored the winning goal. He's just so good at basically jabbing people in the chest and saying, I'm better than you, and what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we haven't mentioned about Maradona, and I think it's in reference to the number of goals he scored in that season, is that he played killer balls over and over again. He would always be looking for the killer ball and never knocked it off sideways and thinks, you know, you go and have a go. He would either score the goal himself or he would look to play the assist into a man. And it's related again to that courage. He was prepared to risk it in order to win it. And I think that feeds into leadership. I think everybody who played with Maradona knew that, yeah, he might run past everybody and score a goal, but he also might lay on a chance for you.
And that's why he managed to rip so many teams through to so much success. I mean, 86 and 1990... The Argentinian teams are no great shakes, were they?
No, I mean, again, like Napoli, they're good players like Burruchaga and people like that. But no, they've got no place getting to a World Cup final, never mind winning it.
You take Maradona out of that, they're probably, you know, I don't know, going the England route, aren't they? But it's... anything else to add on Diego Armando Maradona before we move off?
Just an absolute privilege to have been of an age. As I say, I was 23 in 86, and to be that age and to be watching Maradona even on television, I think I felt even then I'm never going to see this in the rest of my life, and so it's proved so far. But I'm just glad I had the chance to do it.
Yeah, same really. I don't think he'll die wandering. I think that's what I like the most about him.
Yeah, that's very, very true. The 86 game for me is one of the... I was only 10, and it's one of the first kind of proper international games I can remember watching and remember so much of it. And I think the main reason is because my mum watched it. My mum hates football. And she watched it and got really, really into it. And had a big, strong opinion afterwards that John Barnes should have been on the field from the beginning and stuff, even though she knows nothing about football and won't tolerate it.
Actually, just one last point. The quarterfinals and semis, he scored 2 goals. And finally, didn't actually do that much. I think Mateus marked him really well. But he still, when they're in all kinds of trouble at 2-2 and hanging on, suddenly plays this stunning first-time pass that leads to Burruchaga's goal. So it wasn't, like Gary said, it wasn't just his goal scoring, his solo runs. He just had everything, really.
Made the team tick, as they say. Right, then that was Diego Armando Maradona. I want to talk about, just very quickly, the people who've been given the new Maradona title. And obviously, we've firmly established that it's not possible to have a new Maradona, or we'll be very, very lucky if we do see it. But I think there's something about the era in which he played the game, which will mean we'll never see the like of him again, because like you said, Rob, you can't behave like that anymore.
And the pitches as well. I think that's really important.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think those are the two big things that make, and that's why I completely understand why younger people think Messi's a superior player. They're wrong, but I understand why they think that.
They're absolutely wrong. I can understand why they're wrong. Yeah,
it's just a different sport. It's very hard to compare.
Yes. So, new Maradona then. Let's have a look at the players that have been dubbed the next Maradona and try, if we can, to give them a sort of new Maradona rating out of 10 very quickly, okay? The first one was Diego Latore. And I think basically because he was the next player to come through at Boca, who looked a bit like him.
Yeah, I remember a bit about him. The Copper American, because Argentinian football used to be on Screen Sport, which was on a very early Sky. And I remember Copper America 91, all the games were on. They had like a weird commentary team, people like Martin O'Neill, John Fashanu, Alan Parry. But I remember staying up partly because everyone late, it was football, and partly because it was a discreet way of watching soft porn on Sky Movies. 11 days, 11 nights. But I remember there was a lot of hype about Latore. And
a classic of the genre, that is, by the way.
Yeah, but it turned out that Batistuta emerged in that tournament. And then Latore was supposed to go to Fiorentina. I don't know if he ever did, actually. But there was a lot of hype about him. And then he was kind of trumped by Batistuta. So, yeah, never quite happened.
No, he got 6 caps for Argentina. Never quite really happened, so I suppose for me, about a 3 out of 10, really.
Did he go to Fiorentina in the end? I'm sure they agreed to, and then did they take Batistuta instead, or...?
I don't remember.
But I do remember a bit of that kind of impressionable age when someone tells you someone's the next Maradona, and you absolutely take it.
He did go to Fiorentina. He played for them twice, scoring 0 goals. Actually, if you're going to do a journeyman of the week type thing, he had quite a few clubs: Boca Juniors, Fiorentina, Tenerife, Salamanca, back to Boca Juniors, Racing Club, Cruz Azul, and so on and so on and so on. He had quite a number of clubs. As you say, it didn't quite work out for him. The next one I've got on the list is Ariel Ortega. Now, I think he's probably, him or Pablo Aimar are probably the ones that you could probably, they're not Maradona, but in terms of the new Maradona, if you think about Ortega, he was a bit loopy. Like Diego was. He once got banned by Fenerbahce for not bothering to come back after playing for Argentina, for example. And I remember him playing in France 98.
He was fantastic.
Well, I remember absolutely shitting myself every time he got the ball in Saint-Étienne against England. We were trying to defend when Beckham had been sent off.
Funnily enough, I'll shut up in a minute and let Gary talk. But I'm doing something on that game at the moment. And I've been reading a few England biographies. And even Neville said he's one of the best players he's ever been on a field with. I agree, he was so clever and fast. And at one thing in that game, he nutmegs everyone. Just the amount of times he nutmegs an England player is astonishing. And I don't really know what happened to him after that. Where did he play? He was in Spain at the time, wasn't he?
He went back to River Plate at the end.
He was linked with United at one point. And I remember being really excited. But yeah, he looked so good in France 98 and feels like his career never quite...
Well, he was a proper 10. He played 87 times for Argentina. So, you know,
did he?
Yeah.
But he was a very good player. The other thing is he's really associated with chips and lobs. I didn't really know this until I read it somewhere on The Guardian, possibly. But yeah, there are some YouTube clip videos of him just lobbing people from absurd angles and stuff. So yeah, I think he's a decent contender.
He was at Valencia in 98.
That's right.
He went to Sampdoria, Parma, back to River Plate, then Fenerbahce where they banned him. And then Newell's Old Boys and River Plate, 87 caps, 16 goals, not many international goals compared to Diego. But yeah, I think he looked a bit like him. He was a proper 10. He's the one who probably, for me, is closer to being... Do you remember much about Ortega, Gary?
Maybe I'm wrong in this. This will show you my depth of knowledge about European football. But I seem to remember he looked quite a lot like Leo Sayer. Am I right in that?
No, that was Pablo Aimar, I think.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, baby, but, Pablo Aimar. Yeah, but he was a very good player, Ortega. I'd say he's probably a 7 out of 10 on the new Diego.
7 or 8, yeah, I think that's fair.
Next up, Marcelo Gallardo.
I remember being quite excited about him at France 98, mainly because I've read good things about him, and I think he's probably good.
He won a championship with an unfancied team. With Monaco, the traditionally unfancied team. That's probably about the only thing that makes him similar.
He played all right in France, and he came on against England as well, because I remember being absolutely terrified of their depth. They had people like Crespo, Gallardo on the bench.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they had, obviously, Batistuta, Ortega, Claudio Lopez, Veron, before we realised what a chance he was. Gallardo, I don't know much about beyond France 98, really. Let's write him off with a 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. Next, Franco Di Santo. Let me just say this right now. Nobody who played for Blackburn and Wigan could be the next Diego Maradona. Next. Juan Roman Riquelme.
Gary, over to you.
Yeah. There's an MBM, a minute by minute, that you did, Rob, at the Guardian in 2007 of the Copa America final, where that Argentina side, you've probably got it to hand there, but they had an absolute ton of talent, if you believe the propaganda, and you were up against a Brazil side that somewhat surprisingly didn't have much talent. And I'd seen a bit of this one, Roman Riquelme, and I'd heard that he'd sort of won a Spanish championship on his own or something or other. And there he is, poncing about in the midfield. And I think I sent to you that he and Varane looked like Charlie Hawtrey and Kenneth Williams in a carry-on midfield, because neither of them barely moved, expecting the ball to come to them, flouncing around when it wasn't delivered to them perfectly. And Riquelme, you know, has his fans and obviously has significant achievement behind him. But if you want to see the kind of player that I don't rate, then... from Riquelme, give the ball to me, give the ball to me. Oh, you haven't. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Can somebody else go and get the ball and give it to me?
Lovely player, though. When he had the ball, he was a lovely player. Yeah.
He did some good things in the World Cup in 06. Played one lovely pass for Saviola, scored against Ivory Coast, I think.
He was at the heart of that renaissance for Villarreal, wasn't he?
Well, that's the thing, though. I think
well, not even a renaissance, the fact that they suddenly appeared to be half-decent out of nowhere.
Thing I'll always remember him for is that missed penalty in the last minute against Arsenal in the Champions League semi-final. Would have taken it to extra time. And do you remember they did that Hawaii 5-0 style cut? It's extraordinary. It's on YouTube. And you could just see it in his eyes. Like, and I know people say this after the event, but it genuinely, you could see it in his eye. It kept going like, it was really weird. It's hilarious. They kept like zooming in like Hawaii 5-0 and you could just see he was going to miss. And he did.
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember thinking he's definitely going to miss.
One thing that's interesting is he inspires, like as Gary said, he really does have his fans. People who like him have this kind of crazy devotion to. He's almost like a pre-Pirlo. I know he played further forward, but in terms of the way people like him, Pirlo was a better
You can
player.
See why the football hipsters like him.
I was trying not to get to that, but yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, oh, no, totally. No, he was a beautiful passer of the ball. It's just like Gary said, he wanted...
But stylistically, he was as far away from Diego as you could get, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. He wanted a lot of butlers on the pitch serving him.
Pablo Aimar is next, or Leo Sayer, as you've identified him as. Pablo Aimar, lovely little player, played for Valencia. Yep. Diego liked him a lot, loved watching him.
Lovely balance as well.
Broke his club's transfer record as well.
Yeah, he was a really good player. But he played in 2002, didn't he, at the World Cup, I think. Nice. Yeah, I associate him with all the little kind of really cute 10-yard stab passes in tight areas.
Yeah, he was a proper attacking midfielder. And again, played at that sort of just below the kind of super elite level. Valencia,
yeah, exactly.
Well, Zaragoza, Benfica, you know.
What years was he at Valencia? Was it when they got to the Champions League final?
Oh,
he played in the second one. So he went after. Because they got to two in 00 and 01. Or did he come in at 0 anyway? Never mind. Yeah, interesting. It's interesting also how often you look at these players, they kind of must have played for a huge club. And they kind of didn't even you go back, and I know it's slightly different because of foreign rules, but like when all those great Brazilians came over in the 80s, like to Italy, like Socrates, Zico Jr., they all played for like Torino, Fiorentina, Udinese. Seems extraordinary now they weren't at like Zico's at Udinese and Mark Haitley and Luther Blissett were at Milan. But anyway.
I hated Mark Haitley. I can't describe how much I dislike Mark Haitley.
I think he's underrated. I genuinely think he'd be good for underrated.
God, I couldn't stand him. But anyway, yeah, that's another episode. Yeah, so Aimar, 6 out of 10 on the next Diego.
Seven.
What's Riquelme? -5 you gave him, Gary. We'll be talking about this on WhatsApp.
I'm sticking with the -5.
Next, Andres D'Alessandro. No. Nope. Just leaving that. Not even commenting on it. Unless anyone's got something they want to say about Andres D'Alessandro.
Did he end up at Portsmouth?
Yes. That's why we're moving on.
Can I interject a point on the whole list of the next Maradonas? The Argentina have not won a World Cup nor a Copa America since 1993. You know, that's 85 years.
That's a bit like when somebody tells you that a Frenchman hasn't won the Tour de France since 85. People can't believe it, can they? You know.
But you know, there's only about 3 French riders, and one of them was Richard Varenc. So I kind of understand that. But when you think of the talents that Argentina have produced in that time, that somehow it never came together in any way to win either a continental or a world tournament. It is extraordinary. I think they've got some Olympics and stuff like that. But you know, they're the two tournaments that they play for, isn't it? As a national team, you play for your continental tournament, Euros in England, Copa America in Euros in Europe, Copa America in South America, and the World Cup. And 25 years.
Yeah, amazing.
That is pretty. Yeah, no, you're right. They've had some damn good teams. I just thought something of Ortega as well. He was the one who was sent off for putting a head on Edwin van der Sar in the World Cup quarterfinal just before Bergkamp
scored. Which is actually quite remarkable because Ortega's 5'7".
I know, but it's like an upper,
oh, yeah.
upper head.
An uppercut headbutt. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
An upper butt. Oh, good God, that, no.
Go there.
Next on the list, Javier Saviola. Now, you see, I think for a start, he's a forward rather than an attacking midfielder. That's my first point.
Yeah, probably.
He was top class, though. He was top class.
It's got bugger all to do with anything, but my favourite Saviola detail is, see, it's worth looking up Rivaldo Saviola Deportivo, and Rivaldo almost scores the greatest goal of all time, and he ends up buggering the last bit, and it still goes in, Saviola scores, but he does. There's no celebration at Barcelona of score because he walks away like he's just run over his dog because he knows he's missed the chance. Basically, it's like a 50-yard pass, controls it, flicks it up, and then volleys it, cushions it over the keeper. It's astonishing. But more to point, I just love the fact he doesn't do the whole mock, oh, we scored anyway bit, because he knows he could have scored the greatest goal of all time. But Saviola was really good, played in that 06 team, who were fantastic.
Suarez always reminds me of Saviola a little bit.
I think Suarez is the kind of, he's the new Maradona. But
yeah,
that's another,
it's true. Yeah,
even it's though he's a forward, like, he's a spiritual heir.
I agree with that, yeah, including doing stupid things, yeah.
Exactly, and putting up to England and everything else, and yeah.
But of course, anyway. Saviola, for some, Marcelo Bielsa hated him, didn't he? He wouldn't play him when Bielsa was in charge of Argentina.
I don't know.
He didn't. He didn't play under Bielsa at all, basically.
Yeah. And how did that work out for Bielsa then?
No, indeed, quite. Very quickly, the last ones. Carlos Marinelli. He played for Middlesbrough.
Barra, yeah.
The only people who gave him the nickname was the English press, and that's because he was left-footed and they signed him from Boca Juniors. He struggled to be a decent professional footballer, never mind the next Diego Maradona.
I love some of the links you get. It's like when Pogba was emerging and everyone said he was a new Vieira, and what they meant is he was tall, French and black. That was it. There was no similarity in style at all.
He ended up being loaned out to Torino, I think, Marinelli, and then came back to Middlesbrough, then disappeared back to Boca, I think. I can't remember.
He wasn't a... You could tell he had talent, but yeah.
But you know.
It didn't ever quite... Yeah, no.
You've then got the 3 players who are playing now, which you've probably covered. Tevez, Messi, Aguero, who I think are all different kind of players, and apart from Messi, but...
Yeah, Messi gets like a 9.5. But you're right, slightly different player as well.
Then finally on the list was Ezequiel Lavezzi, who's a winger. So why the hell he ends up being called the new Maradona, I've got no idea. So what
racism.
This... What? Sorry?
I don't know.
What this list teaches us, more than anything, I think, is that the new Maradona title is never very wisely used and should perhaps stop being used, especially 25 years on.
What it's do you have the to new do Ian to... Botham. It's the new Ian Botham.
Yeah, how? It's interesting, though. No one ever spoke about the new Cruyff, did they?
Yeah, did I suppose.
What is? I don't know why. We had the new Gascoigne, I suppose, up to a point. And you, Ian Botham, obviously. I don't know why certain people seem to qualify more than others.
If you're not talking about Dennis Bergkamp as the new Johan Cruyff, you're not talking about anybody, really. And now I know they're not the same player, but there's more comparison between Bergkamp and Cruyff than there are between arguably any of those, except Messi and Maradona.
But no one ever said that, did they? As far as I'm aware.
No.
Yeah, interesting. Who knows?
It is funny because there aren't many players who get the who's the new.
New Shane Warne, obviously, in cricket. I mean, it's distinctive characters.
There must be something about
characters.
And it's always somebody who's got something. Both of them, and Warne, to switch sports a minute,
someone who likes the odd doofy.
Well, but, well, or whatever. There is something else to them other than their ability on the field, isn't there?
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
We hope you have enjoyed our little gallop through remembrances of the greatest Diego Maradona and then the not-so-greatest people who tried to follow him to different degrees of success. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time, Rob.
Cheers.
And thank you, Gary.
Not at all. Thank you.
And we will speak to you all again soon. Take care. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.